Our opening words come this morning from Jane Resbica, who is a Unitarian Universalist minister. Her little essay is called Humanizing Mom. On Mother's Day, one expects to hear about the wonder and glory of motherhood. While I can tell you from personal experience that mothers like to be appreciated, I can also tell you that a rosy and sentimental Mother's Day column always refers to mothers in some other family. The picture painted there is not me, not my mom, not my grandmother's. In my family, mothers do not suffer any more than other mortals, nor are we particularly unsung. We complain when we trip over shoes on the living room floor, and we expect a little praise for carrying the daily grand accumulation at the bottom of the stairs up the stairs. We do not deserve or expect devotion from our children. We wanted to have children. It was our idea. If they come around from time to time when they are grown-ups, we are ever so glad. If they live their lives as secure and independent souls, we value that. Motherhood in my family is not always the most important job in the world. Some of us are actually good at it. Some of us shuffle along and do our best. And a few are better off in other professions. We try to face that. Mother's Day is no time to romanticize parenthood. Parenting is a down-to-earth process if there ever was one. So this Mother's Day, let's humanize Mom. Thank her for doing what she could, given all the dirty socks. Thank her for loving you as well as she was able in spite of your 3 years in junior high. And then let her thank you for the privilege of being your mother. Good morning. I'm Michael Nelson, the minister here at the Manhattan Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I extend a warm greeting to everyone here, especially our visitors and guests. Let us take a moment to say good morning to each other. Women's organizer and activist Ann Reeves Jarvis was the inspiration for her daughter, Anna Jarvis, and others, including Julia Howe, Ward Howe, a Unitarian, to found Mother's Day, to honor people's intimate connection with their mothers and the active political role of women in making peace. Ironically, the national holiday today is commemorated with cards and flowers and by federal proclamation honors a woman's place in the house, the home. Because as Unitarian Universalists, we aspire to support the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we acknowledge the differences between mothers, the different circumstances in which people become mothers. Moments arise in our lives when we know that their greater goodness requires us to forgive our mothers for however they might have harmed us and to forgive ourselves for harming them in the ways that we have done so. This goodness expands when we honor our mothers for bringing us into the world, and best when the goodness expands to a love that understands everyone's place in this interdependent web of existence. This morning we honor the woman's place in the world and lift up the needs of mothers and a mother's love, which we all have within, for respect in every aspect aspect of this life we share. May a mother's love guide us in dark times. Now I'd like to draw your attention to the announcements in our order of service, and I have an additional announcement. There are all kinds of green gifts out in the kitchen brought by Sybil Perkins, so please share in this wonderful bounty, this garden bonanza. Organically grown, as Sybil lets me know clearly, which is important. So thank you, Sybil. Let us stand and sing with full heart, number 318, We Would Be One. Thank you, that was lovely. Now is the time in our order of service when we set all of the jumble of activities that we have planned for today aside. And remember those things that lift our hearts up into that soaring place where happiness is real. And into that place where sometimes shadow darkens everything. So if you have a personal joy or sorrow or grief that you would like to share, this is the time to do so. Is there any over here?
We We have a joy this morning. We have a new member, Marissa Larson. Would you stand up, Marissa? And her son, Jake. Let's welcome them.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, William. Amy Fowler, and I have a couple of joys. On Thursday, not only did I become an official homeowner, but I also became an aunt on the same day.
All right.
Ann Cowan, last week I was in Seattle, and I visited the Perkins, Charlie and Nancy. Anyone who's been around a few years will know them, and they send their greetings to all of you, and they are doing well.
So for those joys and those no griefs, I think, here that have been shared, let us be mindful and celebrate with them. And for those joys and concerns that have not been shared, let us be mindful that we each carry those and be kind to one another. So, Sandy.
Oh, sure. Is this the right voice? Good. Good morning, children. Children, come hither. Is this for me? Oh. Don't you guys want to sit up on the stage? Yeah, totally. Good morning. Do we have all the kids? William, are you going to join us? Okay. I have notes. I'm not sure I'm going to follow them, but I'm going to find them and pull them out. You guys, what is today? What was Michael saying? What is today?
Mother's Day.
Kaya says Mother's Day. What was that? Someone else said something? No, okay. Yeah? Today is Mother's Day. And what is a mother? Oh, sorry, I'll get closer.
A girl that takes care of
you. Kai says, again?
A girl that takes care of you.
A girl, that's okay, uh-huh. Anything else? Anybody else got a... Jake?
Somebody takes care of you.
Takes care of you. That's a good theme. Excuse me. Well, good morning, Rose. Good morning, Ronan. Yes, Connor.
Someone that let you out into the world.
Say that again.
Someone who let you out into the world.
Let you out into the world. That's a real good one. Anybody else? We got a caring theme and a out into the world theme going. Anybody else? What's a mother? Okay. Well, who else cares for you?
A dad.
A dad could care for you. So is a dad a mother? A grandma and grandpa, says Leah. Anything else? Your aunt and uncle cares for you. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot. Your brother and sister cares for you, says Rose. A lot of people care for you. Your nana cares for you. Is that a grandma? Yeah. A nana. Nana's a nana. You know what? I need my glasses to do this. So we got mothers care for you. What else do mothers do in general? I know that Lily's mother does a few things. Like she gets her up in the morning and get her off to school. Although really, Lily's mother just lets the cat in, and the cat... Sam, who is not a mother, Sam gets in bed and wakes Lily up. So is Sam a mother?
Not yet.
Yeah, it turns out Sam is not not male either. What else do mothers do? Leah?
Some mothers cook for you.
Some mothers cook, but that's good. Some mothers cook. I like that. Because fathers cook a lot at our house. Yeah, so it doesn't mean you're a mother just because you cook, right? Leah, or Kaya? Did you want to say something? Big microphoning. Yes, Jake, did you want to say something?
Something takes care of you.
Yeah, we got that. Takes care of you. What else do mothers do? Okay, mothers do a lot. Obviously, we're speechless. They do so much. Yes, Connor.
They hug, kiss, and love you.
Man, hug, kiss, and love you. That's cool. Grandmothers, we covered that. About the same thing, or grandmothers a little different? Little different, says Leah. You want to comment?
They're older.
They're older. They're older. Yes. Connor.
Because they're the mother of your mother.
Generally, the mother of your mother, or the mother of your father, or, you know, you guys all have classroom grandparents, grandmother, grandfather. Are they really your grandmother and grandfather?
No.
No. So they are people who care for you, so they fit that definition, right? Yeah. So today, I understand that the adults were talking about, well, you know, I don't really know what the adults are talking about, but I read something that said, use the phrase spirit mother. At least I think I read that. What do you suppose a spirit mother is? Anybody? Yeah, I don't know either. But what do you imagine a spirit mother might be? Oh, come on. Nothing? Well, I think, what was the theme? Mothers care for you? So you suppose a spirit mother might always care for you and always be there for you, no matter what?
Well, that's almost being a mother.
Caring for you, that's part of it, right?
Yeah, and always being there for you.
Always being there for you. Well, you guys know who Corey is, Corey Zeller? I think she is an uber spirit mother for this fellowship. And I don't know if you guys know this or not, but she got a really, really cool job at the university. So she is not going to have as much time to be such an uber spirit mother for us anymore. Yes, Rose?
I already know the job. She's working at K-State.
That's right. So, since she's not going to have as much time to be such an uber spirit mother anymore, all of these people out here, you see them all? They are all going to be your spirit mothers. So you can go to them, you can think about them, you can have them in your heart, and you can always have all of these people, not just the women, Dick. They can be, all the men can be spirit mothers too, because a spirit mother isn't a mother, as in female, whoever said that. Spirit mother is simply that mothering spirit within each of us. But there's a catch today. Older kids can help younger kids with this, okay? And Rachel, I apologize if I spelled your name wrong. Each of you are getting a name tag today. Okay, oh, you know what, Rose? I don't have one for you. Well, here, why don't you pass it down to Rachel? Find yours, pass it on. There's a Ronan, there's a Destiny. Okay, well, keep looking. Pass it on if it's not yours. Oh, there's a Burke in here somewhere. Here's a Nick. So each of you is getting a name tag today, and your personal, here's Connor, your personal spirit mother is going to have a matching name tag. Okay? Rose, I'll get you yours, I promise. Who we got here? I got one for Helen. Got to be delivered, apparently. So each of you is getting your personal spirit mother. Now, how are you going to find your personal spirit mother? Any ideas? Rose, shout it out.
Yeah.
You look. We're going long. We got to hustle here.
If the name tag is the same.
That's right. Who? You see if the name tag is the same. So you could ask questions if you don't see a name tag. Because right now you don't see any other people with name tags, right? Those exact name tags. So if you don't see your matching name tag, what kind of questions could you ask? Maybe Sybil, or older woman that I don't know. Are you my spirit mother?
Older woman?
Not older than me, but older than them. Come on. Give me a break. Okay, all right, so maybe older woman is not the thing to say, but you, wise woman, how's that? Are you my spirit mother? And she might say,
I'd love to be.
Well, there you go. But apparently she wasn't, because she didn't say yes. So you guys got some ideas on how you can ask? And, you know, it could be anybody out there. Didn't have to be a woman. Could be a man. Could be an unidentified gendered person. Could be a cat. Who do you suppose, just for example, who do you suppose is Lily's spirit mother?
Yeah.
How do you know? You didn't ask me a question.
Because
I have a name tag on that matches Lily's. But this is simply for example. Lily is not my spirit child. Today, for this experiment, she's always my spirit child. She made me biscuits this morning. It was very exciting. Okay, so you got it? Find your spirit mothers, but they won't necessarily be showing their name tag. And this process could take weeks, could take all summer for you to find your spirit mothers. Okay? Just know that they're out there thinking of you, taking care of you, splitting up the job of Uber spirit mother that Corey does so well. Got it? Do you agree to do it at all? Yeah, well, okay, that was that. Go now in peace.
Where you may go. Now is one of our favorite times in the month of Sundays, which is the Helping Hand Sunday. And today's offering, if you choose to give it to them, is for the Autism Spectrum Camp. And we have Cheryl Richt, who will share some information and inspiration about this wonderful program. Cheryl, welcome.
Good morning, and thank you so much for allowing us to be here today. And to fill you in a little bit on what we are, who we are, and how we started. The name of our camp is Flint Hills Summer Fun Camp. This is a camp that was started by a group of parents from the Flint Hills Autism Spectrum Support Network. Our summer camp is an autism spectrum camp. But what we have are two-thirds of our children in the camp are typically developing children, and one-third are on the autism spectrum. And I want to give you just a little bit of history how we started, really 3 years ago. And although I would like to say it was three very short and fast years, a lot of this 3 years was very long and hard. This was not an easy project, and any of you that have been involved with or started not-for-profit type of groups, you'll know what I'm talking about. This is not an easy thing to do. But there was a group of parents that were actually at a January meeting discussing, well, what are your kids doing for the summer? We were already thinking and basically panicking about how are we going to keep our children active in the summer. Some of our parents had come off the winter break and had been like, oh man, this was, you know, 2 weeks. What are we going to do when it's 3 months? So we started figuring out or discussing opportunities in our community, you know, through different day camps and so on, and the fact that they weren't meeting the needs of our children. Our kids were being sent home. You know, the behaviors are off. Some, you know, they're not participating. Children on the autism spectrum, although it is a huge spectrum, two of the very significant common denominators are gaps and problems with communication and social skills. This can be, as I said, it's a huge spectrum, that there can be some children that just don't even verbalize at all. They need types of communication devices, whether it's pictures or now we've got these wonderful iPads and so on, to kids who are extremely verbal, but to many of us aren't going to make a lot of sense, or they really focus in on their one hot topic, which in social situations and building relationships with peers doesn't work. So a lot of our kids were really being left out. They weren't having friendships. They weren't mixing in the groups. They were the kids sitting at the side, not participating. So we really wanted to come up with a way. How do we do this? How do we figure this out and get our kids involved and find really the trained staff to work with them? And thus we came up with Flint Hills Summer Fun Camp. When we started, the first things you have to find, where are you going to hold this? Who is going to work? How are we going to raise money? And the first year, we didn't steal, but boy, did we beg and borrow. And we ended up, our budget, I think the first year was close to $50,000. We have certified special ed teachers that work with the children. We brought in speech-language pathologists, occupational therapists, all of these types of treatments that our children require. It's also sort of a double-edged sword. Although all of our kids are needing this, for many families, it's not covered through insurance and so on. So this was one of the opportunities to offer these things to this population. The first camp, we had 25 kids. We were in one room, and we covered all the ages. We went from 6-year-olds to 12-year-olds. Last summer, we grew into three groups, and we had three classrooms. We had kindergarten, first and second, then we had third and fourth, and fifth and sixth. We will again be that this year. We will have the three groups. We also have had, now we're offering preschool program. One of our goals of this camp was not only to obviously be working and providing an outlet for children on the autism spectrum, we really wanted to help our typical peer children, our typically developing children, learn the skills on how they can become friends with these children and be peer models. Some of the wonderful things that have happened with our camp is we have really developed a great deal of community support and partnership. We have a lot of partnerships now with K-State. We also have partnered with Emporia State. We have art therapists coming from the Emporia State program. We have physical education students from K-State that are involved in the camp. We have occupational therapy, speech therapy students. We have really, it's been neat to see, because as the parents who formed this group, we didn't realize what a collaborating opportunity this was going to be and how these specialists can get away from the rigors of the school year and all the paperwork and all that responsibility and really work with our kids and learn from these children and learn from each other. So that has been just really an exciting plus. I want to make sure I get all these important things. And this year, we've expanded even more. We will have an occupational therapist on staff at all times and a speech-language pathologist there to work with the kids at all times. When it's basically how our day is set up is the morning, 3 to 4 hours, is spent sort of more of an academic schedule. They will go through their math and reading and science and history. They don't know it, but they're doing it. So it's a very fun, it's very much a summer camp, but we've got these academic aspects worked in there too. Children on the autism spectrum will also have issues retaining. So we were also noticing after this big long summer break, we were getting back to school in August and starting all over. So that was another big goal of our camp, is let's help these kids. It wasn't our goal to increase, but rather maintain what they had already learned. So when they were getting back, we were able to really build on these skills and keep them going. So this year we've got this extra group of therapists and teachers working with them, and it's not only the academic. We get out in the community. We go to the swimming pool. We take swimming lessons, which for some of these children was never, ever before possible. Some require one-on-one. They need that special help to get in the pool, to stay safe, to learn how to do this. We're out in the community every week at the library. We have gone to Olive Garden to make pizzas. They go to Living Water Ranch. They're at the zoo. So we are all over the place doing what all the other summer camps do that our kids weren't able to successfully participate in. We have had wonderful partnerships locally with the Pilot Club, with the Pine Foundation. We have partnered now with the school district and their USD 383 Foundation. That's where we do most of our fundraising. And we still beg and borrow to meet our needs. So we are thrilled that, you know, there would be this opportunity here, that you would find this important enough and value this enough that you'd also be willing to support us. We've had a couple nice large grants come in, and anyone who has been involved on this level of starting the grassroots of starting something like this, in order to be eligible for larger funding, you really have to show that you have the support of your community. So this is one of those steps that really builds that and sort of validates that this really is something worthy of larger grants. And our goal this year is we've got to increase our sustainability. We really have to develop how this camp is going to stay. Unfortunately, autism isn't going away. It's getting, you know, more prevalent. So these kids will really benefit from your support, and I really thank you very, very much. And I have a few flyers or brochures that I will leave here for anyone who's interested. We still could use a few more kids, typical developing peers, in the older levels. So they will be back here. If you have any questions, just contact us. And again, I just want to thank everyone very much.
Not in the order of service, but very much in the order of service, Marissa Larson would like to share her journey to motherhood. Please come up, Marissa.
Good morning. You know how many little girls like to play with dolls and pretend to be mothers and dream of having children of their own someday? Well, that wasn't me. I dreamed of traveling the world as a daring foreign correspondent or a swashbuckling archaeologist and had absolutely zero desire to have children. I figured they would just hold me back. But as I got older and had a few serious relationships, I had to think about that type of thing. And I realized that I did want to have kids, just not with any of the guys I'd been dating. So as I got older and still hadn't met Mr. Wright, I started to formulate what I called Plan B. And because I just knew I had to be someone's mom, and if Mr. Wright wasn't there to help me, I still was bound and determined to make this happen. So I looked into all the different possibilities, foreign adoption, foster care system, getting a sperm donor, and decided a sperm donor was for me because I wanted to experience pregnancy. But I continued to try to find Mr. Wright. And I think probably anywhere in the world it'd be, you know, difficult, but in D.C. it was difficult. And Mr. Wright never came along. I had planned to wait until I was 40, but when I hit 35, for some reason, it just clicked. I started noticing pregnant women and babies and realized, okay, now it was time to put Plan B into place. And so I searched and searched and found the right donor. And for my 36th birthday, I bought sperm. And just 3 weeks before my 37th birthday, I had my son, Jake. And when I told my boss that I was pregnant, she said, "Your life is really going to change." And my response was, "Well, that was kind of the purpose. I had a great life. I loved my life, but I was ready for change. I was ready for a more meaningful life, more fulfillment, and a new challenge. I had 8 nieces and nephews whom I loved with all my heart, so I thought I knew what I was getting into. Boy, was I in for a revelation. Sure, I knew how to change diapers and feed a baby and entertain children, but I had no idea the depth of love, the fear for safety or desire for happiness one person could have for another. I'm constantly amazed that I helped create this unique individual, and I'm awed by the responsibility to raise him to be a good person. I'm also eternally grateful to the donor dad for helping to make my dream come true. I craved adventure as a kid, but little did I know that being a mom is the best adventure. It's learning to appreciate the little things in life, jumping in puddles, watching ants march in a line, licking cake batter from beaters. It's the crazy ability to hear your child's voice amid the cacophony of other kids' voices on the playground. It's the unbearable fear that something horrible could happen to your child, brought on by tear-jerking commercials for St. Jude's or those horrible Lifetime Channel movies. It's the pride you feel when your child does something amazing, or at least amazing in your eyes. It's the simple joys that are the best, the I love yous, the hugs, and the kisses. For example, this morning, Jake and I yesterday bought a ukulele, and this morning he sat there strumming it, singing, "I love my mommy, I love," you know, you can't beat that. There are many ways to become a mother, but no matter how it happens, it's a wonderful gift to be cherished.
Thank you. A Mother's Love. I'd like to share this poem by Alice Furman from her book, Inverted Fire. We choose what we take in, not from what we want or need, but from something left undone. Once more, steam fills the kitchen on Wadsworth Avenue, from handkerchiefs boiling on the stove, from clouds and a pot of starch, and you plying the yellow soap on Monday's board, rub again at all our weekly sins. I sit at the table swinging my legs, eating the egg sandwich you fixed between the last rinse and the bluing, adoring you like Cinderella's child. And then, as from a castle's secret wall, you step out from the forbidden door, dressed in your good black dress, trembling in the spotlight of a pair of rhinestone clips. So beautiful, so rare. We cheeped around you like your little birds. Today, walking across the expanse of lawn, I hear the trains blow from some distant place, pulling freight up impossible hills, 2,000 miles away. You come tugging at my memory, flashing for my attention wherever I look. Mama, what's been left undone? Where's the door we didn't close? What silver child was never grown? I lean against the red oak whose rich vertical heart has pulled for over 400 years and must know. What dreams need finishing? What story told? Whose child rocks her forehead against this rough and silent tree, weeping for her mother? Any vision that includes everybody somehow ultimately brings everybody into the family is a good thing. The vision that excludes creates harm and humiliation and often unnecessary death. So what dreams need finishing in your lives, in this community, in the larger community, in Kansas, in the United States, in the world, since we are all connected to that dream? What stories need to be told? Even though parenting is a down-to-earth process dealing with the dirty socks, some of us know that we have borne the brunt of depression and anger from our mothers who were not happy. Not happy for a zillion reasons, sometimes very happy, but you could sense a deep depression. Not every mother, but I could in my mom. She was a super organizer, an eagle-eye perfectionist, a talented musician. So what did she do? She washed the kitchen curtains every month. She waxed and polished the wood floors in our house every month. She was going to have the perfect home. Boy, we three kids would have been grateful if she had a job. But she grew up in a time where that was her goal. And fortunately, now we live in a time where it is not expected that you be a mother. You have a choice, and you can do both. How do you integrate this complex range of experiences you have had with your mother and people who have provided mothering spirit energy to you into your understanding of who you are in this world? Because it's not simple. We know that. We know that love is not simple. Cherishing someone is not simple, and sometimes it can be dangerous. So when do we know when the balance is right? Well, there are a number of approaches. One of the things that I think that we need to look at sometimes is what's happening in this country. Some members of the U.S. House of Representatives have proposed two pieces of legislation that need our support. Let's help close the loop on Mother's Day and write to Congress about the Violence Against Women Act and the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. Last week, the Violence Against Women Act passed the Senate with strong bipartisan support. The Violence Against Women Act was reauthorized and amended to include many new and improved provisions for the protection and care of all women, especially immigrants, LGBT people, and Native American women. These improvements, affirming for many successful programs of the original Violence Against Women Act, are vital to the quality of access to services for these marginalized groups. As you might imagine, they have been stripped out of the bill, right? And other things that actually weaken the Violence Against Women Act have been put in there. So this is an area where we have a worldwide vision, a country vision, that women need protection against violence. It's true. It's a complex truth. And did you know that farm workers who are women who are pregnant can be fired because they can't stand on a ladder? So there are many ways in which pregnant women who have low-paying jobs, who are not in some above-the-glass-ceiling position, if they say they can't do something because they are pregnant, they're often fired. Not always, but often. So there is this legislation that's going through Congress which supports the rights of those women to say, no, this is unhealthy for my unborn child. So look them up. Think about it. Do what you can. And another interesting aspect is something I call the language of the heart. We often think of a baby that is in the womb as developing, and we don't think of which parts are developing necessarily. At least I didn't, because I've never had an ultrasound. But the first one of the first organs to start forming is the heart. It forms before the brain. And the heart gives out so many electromagnetic vibrations that get hooked up to the brain, that inform the brain. So the kind of feelings that you're having during pregnancy and after you give birth to your child and everyone begins to care for that child, the heart is sending out electromagnetic vibrations that get picked up and transmitted and shared, and they create an environment. So if we are not acknowledging the importance of the heart in this process of bringing life into this world and taking care of it, listening, taking those deep breaths when we're ready to just rip someone's head off because we're so angry. Why did you do that? Instead of doing that, of course, none of us have done that, but that rage does boil up. To take that deep breath amongst children, amongst partners, amongst community members, within your extended families, all the nuances and variations and complexities, to listen and to remember that what is coming out of us is impacting everybody. So let it be love more than hate. There are at least 11 million unauthorized immigrants in the United States at this time. In our congregations, people have divergent views on this controversial issue. This year's General Assembly in Phoenix, Justice GA, will focus on the reality of undocumented workers. Notice it's not illegal immigrants, or worse, illegal aliens. And I'd like to ask you a question. Would you consider the pilgrims illegal aliens? Right. There's this whole span of history that informs how we begin to understand how we might consider answering that question. The UUA has taken this upon themselves as a very important issue and has brought it front and center to many of their social action efforts. In 2010, 29 Unitarian Universalists, including 8 ministers, were arrested in Phoenix, along with other immigrant rights activists, while protesting Arizona's strict anti-illegal immigration law. UUs were among hundreds of people who swarmed into downtown streets on the first day of that law, blocking traffic at midday in the vicinity of 4th Avenue Jail and the offices of Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Arpaio, who calls himself America's toughest criminal, toughest sheriff, sorry. That was a Freudian slip. Planned a sweep of illegal immigrants and criminals for July 29th, but had to delay the sweep when protesters blocked the entrance to the jail. Our Unitarian Universalist Association president, Peter Morales, who comes from a Latino background, was one of those people, and he was put in jail for protesting Arizona's crackdown on undocumented immigrants and stood trial. In his trial, Morales told the court that although he originally had not planned to join the protest, he changed his mind when he found out that Sheriff Arpaio had announced his plans to conduct a sweep on immigrants in neighborhoods. During the protest, Morales likened his action to people who gave shelter to runaway slaves. So again, making that wonderful span in history. We have a history of helping people who are sought after and in some ways punished for being different. He requested that the Department of Justice conclude an ongoing investigation into abuses by Sheriff Arpaio to justice. And this last week, a civil lawsuit was filed against the sheriff. 4, having engaged in a pattern and practice of unlawful discriminatory police conduct directed at Latinos, and jail practices that unlawfully discriminate against Latino prisoners with limited English language skills. Latinos in Maricopa County are frequently stopped, detained, and arrested on the basis of race, color, or national origin. And Latino prisoners with limited English language skills are denied the most basic and important constitutional protections. Morales engaged in the protests in front of the jail to impede, if only for one day, in his words, the sheriff's dehumanization of migrants, his raids on the barrios, and his campaign of terror. I think of the children at the detention centers where those parents had been taken away. I think of the thousands who have died in the desert. I think of the young, undocumented adults I have met who came here as infants and now live in constant fear of being deported from the only country they have known. I can still see their faces. They haunt me. So, isn't it grand that our General Assembly, when all the congregations across the continental United States, including Canada, will come to affirm the right of undocumented workers to receive the constitutional protections that we take for granted? This is the force, this is the fulcrum, this is the focus of that gathering. And so a lot of people think of illegal, undocumented immigrants as the people who just like cut your grass if you live in Johnson County, or, you know, they're the people that clean your house, or they're the people that do the roofing, they're the people that, and, you know, they're the people that take care of everything we don't want to do. But really, there are a lot of undocumented immigrants who are much like us. One of them is Anna, who, like many mothers, is racing around trying to do everything, bringing her two kids to band practice, taking them to soccer, making play dates with other families. She says, my girlfriends and I are always on the move. We are like a blur, racing everywhere, doing everything, trying to survive like all women. The difference between Anna and all of us here is that she is seen as the enemy. 11 years ago, Manuel, her husband, lost his job repairing and building computers in northern Mexico. Even though Anna and Manuel had managed their money wisely, they had enough to live for 2 years, they sought for work every single day, both of them. They could not find anything. So Manuel slipped across the border with, not slipped across the border, he had a visa and stayed and got work. And as much as they could, Anna and the children would come to visit Manuel, but the separation, the division was just unbearable for the family. It was breaking the family down. It was wearing their best efforts to be good citizens down. And while they were in Mexico, before he had to come to America, they wrote the government, they did everything they could to try to change the system, but blocked at every possible place. So on one of the visits with a visa, her cousin had an unpaid medical bill, and so everyone was detained and their visas were stripped, even though it was only one person who had one unpaid medical bill in the United States. So she applied for another visa, and it was turned down, and they said in 5 years you could apply for another visa. Meanwhile, her kids would be adolescents and teenage-aged. How could they live without their father? How could they live without them all being together? So Anna and her two kids slipped over somehow. It's amazing to her to this day that she was able to slip into this country. She didn't have to walk across the desert. but to this day she feels like she did something wrong. She feels illegal. She feels like the enemy. And one day they were stopped by the police, her and her husband, for driving too slow. For driving too slow. They were put in a detention center, which they were separated into men and women. And Anna said that it stank of fear, of worry, of being cramped into a hot space without air conditioning, with inadequate toilet facilities. And the people would come in, the officials, and say, "Now, blah, 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 blah." And Anna said, "I need a lawyer." And she told all the other women there who had insufficient language skills to say that and the knowledge to say that. She said, "You tell them you need a lawyer." Somehow, she got out of that. But she has PTSD. She has anxiety attacks. She feels haunted. She feels her family is in peril almost all the time. And why doesn't she return to Mexico? Because in northern Mexico, in central northern Mexico, 12,000 people a year are killed by the drug cartel. So a lot of the small businesses and mid-sized businesses have been shut down because of the violence. There is no place for them to go back to. Now this, like being a mother, is a very complex issue. But if we bring the mothering spirit that says everyone should be included in considering how to create the best good, we would come up with better solutions, better answers. People would not be treated like vermin. They would not be incarcerated without any reason other than the fact that they look like they could be a legal, undocumented worker. So can you imagine living with that fear all the time? Let us do what we can to help mothers be treated humanely so their children can grow into their true and best selves, so that we can all breathe deeply and freely. Now I'd like to ask Chuck to come and share a moment in his history as a lawyer that I think is something that will help.
It was back in 1998. There had been a murder that had occurred in Wichita. Because the federal government was interested in capital cases, it was taken to federal court, which is where I found it. These cases start with much contention, and they push people further and further apart. We charged the government and Janet Reno with racism and were darn close to making it stick. And they charged our client with being some kind of a cold-blooded murderer who just hadn't gotten caught before. The families, of course, were being pushed apart, just as the lawyers were being pushed apart. And we finally got to the point where the racism charge forced the government to concede, and we worked out a plea to life without parole. The families were almost an afterthought by this time. I'm talking about both families. We got to the sentencing hearing, and these hearings are scripted. Nothing goes on that isn't scripted. It's all rehearsed, at least on the defense side, and if anything unusual happens, it's because there's a problem. We got through the sentencing hearing, the script was done. The little play was finished. The mother of the victim, who had testified and said she was okay with life without parole, walked down from the witness stand. The lawyers packed up their goods, and she met the son, the mother of our client, who had been now found guilty of murdering her son. The two of them just looked at each other and they hugged.
What dreams need finishing? What story told? What dreams do you need to finish? What stories do you keep buried that need to be told? I will close with this story of my mother and my grandmother. My grandmother, an immigrant from Sweden, came from a very tough farming family who did everything they could to make it in Sweden. They could barely survive. Coming to America, they found a way to survive, but she was a tough mom. She didn't think the girls should have dolls, but she did everything to make sure that they were clothed and that they were clean, and that they had good food, they had a place to stay, even sometimes if it was just one room with four people in it. My mother grew up always trying to please her mother. Everything she did was focused on pleasing her mother. She wanted her mother's love. And my mother was exemplary in every single way in terms of doing every possible thing she could do to help her mother, especially as she aged and couldn't take care of herself. She was the one who took care of her. And then when she went into the rest home, she visited her every single day, making sure that she was turned so that she wouldn't get bed sores, making sure that she was properly cleaned and clothed and given some stimulation. But not once in 65 years did my grandmother ever say to my mother, "I love you." My mother never felt loved. It was the driving force in her life. And then when my grandmother was rushed to the emergency room with some heart problem at 92, my mother was called. She came to the emergency room, and as my grandmother was being wheeled into the emergency room, operating or whatever it was, she took my mother's hand and said, "Doris, I have to thank you for everything you have ever done for me, and I love you." That was a healing moment. May we provide healing moments for each other in the same way. Don't forget to tell people you love them. You don't know what harm it may do. Let us be a justice-loving community. Thank you. Well, we have 3 minutes for conversation. So is there any quick thoughts that someone would like to share on the incredible range of what it means to be a mother?
Last night, I watched the Netflix movie, The Help. And I watched these loving, giving women who were the help, nurture children, and it made me think of my own childhood, which was almost identical. I had Lovey Lewis, and she was that loving person. And I woke up this morning thinking, I think a lot of people had that experience, particularly if you grew up in the South. And Lovey was not only nurturing and loving. She was also humorous. She could be strict. She let me go barefoot when it was forbidden by my mother. And when I was growing up and thinking it was important to be skinny, she would make me fried pies and give them to me and say, "Barbara, there's no comfort in a bony woman." So I love Lovey Lewis, and I remember her today, and I hope some of you also had that experience.
All right, we have time for one more minute. Does someone have Florence?
Hi, I was just writing down a few things while you were speaking, mostly about the immigrants. And one thing I might announce is, and you probably already know, July 1st is the election of the new president for, or incumbent, but for the president of Mexico. And so that is something to watch. And we always hope when we have a new president down there that things will change, that it will improve. And it doesn't seem to very enough. And the other thing is, I have been alerted to the fact, I mean, I have studied some of this, but the source of immigration, illegal or legal, that it takes so long. I've said, why do they come over illegally? Why don't they all just come over legally? And the fact is that they have to wait so long to get the legality of their coming. And it's also a compliment to our country that they all want to come here. We must be wonderful. But another thing is that I've heard about guest workers. And I don't know who started it, but one of our presidents, and I won't mention his name, and other governmental senators or representatives have mentioned this guest worker. And it always sounded so great that they could come over and they could, I mean, even the computer person you mentioned could get a job as a guest worker and then send money or take money with him back to his family. And so that was, those are just some of the things I was thinking.
Thank you, Florence.
Yeah.
So let us now stand as you want, or sit if you want, and sing hymn number 89, Come My Way, My Truth, My Life. May mother's love remind us daily of the sanctity of all life. Touch our hearts with the oneness of all creation. Make us tender to the beauty of the earth and fill us with renewing joy. Open our hearts with knowledge so that we may achieve a world of harmony and be thankful for the mothering love that guides us to create heaven here on earth now. Go in peace. Right on.